Hello, this is Daryl Etherington. I'm here with
Jordan Crook
and
Anthony Ha.
And we are bringing you the TechCrunch Original Content Podcast, a podcast where we talk about original content that's streamed via modern streaming services or sometimes legacy media also. Whatever we feel like, basically. So I hope you don't have a problem.
Yeah, sometimes it's just anything entertainment related. We do what we want.
No rules.
Yeah, no rules. Yeah.
We reject your categories.
This is streaming anarchy over here. Yeah, we got a good show for you today. You can tell probably from our enthusiasm.
What do we do? What do we do on the show?
Well, we're going to review the new Netflix film, Mute. But before that, we're going to run through a few different streaming stories. The first one is actually a story that Jordan wrote yesterday. I guess it'll be 2 days ago or longer than that when people listen to this episode. But it's about this new Netflix special called The Push. Jordan, what is The Push?
It's from Darren Brown, who is a mentalist and illusionist. That's what he calls himself. And the show is interesting in only one respect, that Netflix is kind of getting more into reality television. Other than that, it's bizarre. It's about this guy, Darren Brown, and he's pulling like an Ashton Kutcher. It's kind of like the Punked,
but evil.
He's trying to get people to kill people. Yeah, exactly. Like, instead of being like, oh, you owe this art gallery like $10,000, insert celebrity name here, like, get mad for the cameras. It's like, you have caught yourself in a web of lies, and the only way out is to push this guy off of a ledge.
Yeah. Normal, are you in? Normal person who has never done anything wrong and is definitely deserving of this torture.
And there's going to be like 70 actors who are in on the prank and are kind of pushing him towards this end goal. And in the trailer, the Darren Brown is like, you know, this is all about how we hand over authorship of our lives, you know, and like, will someone, you know, can someone be made to push someone off of a ledge, you know? And
yeah.
And he says something like, Chris has found himself entwined in a web of lies, which is good. I need him to feel like there's no other way out. You know, it's just like, what the hell? What?
It looks like outtakes from the Hunger Games or whatever, but like with this real jerk, this Darren Brown guy, who's like apparently a real person sitting up in the control tower orchestrating everything.
Outtakes from the Hunger Games. Yeah, I get what you're saying. Like he's in the game maker room or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. That room.
Yeah. No, it's bizarre. And it was on in the UK, I believe, couple years ago. Yeah, a couple years ago. And it ran on Channel 4. And they did the same kind of thing. And it's always like a push, which...
Because that's the easiest one. It's the easiest kill way.
Yeah. Because it feels almost like you could... like. Less evidence, right? I guess you could probably get away with it easier. Like, oh, they fell. And you don't have to, like, look them in the eye. You know, like, I don't know. The whole thing to me is just...
well, I mean,
upsetting.
It is upsetting. I actually am just reading the Stephen of the Kings. What's it called? The Dark Tower, the drawing of the three, and then the other one.
Which book is it?
I think I just read that. So you know what I'm talking about, because it has, you know, the guy who pushes people in front of shit as one of the characters. Anthony, do you know what I'm talking about?
Like Roland, right?
Right, but one of the, not Roland, but another character.
Oh, I don't know. Oh. I've only read the first book in The Dark Tower.
Oh, right, okay. So, anyways, one of the characters in it is like a guy who is a murderer, and specifically his method is pushing. So it's a little bit weird that this came up.
Just like the lamest thing ever. Like, it's one thing to like be this innocent person who feels like they have to like get themselves out of trouble by pushing some guy off a ledge, and it's a totally different thing to be like, I'm a serial killer who pushes people.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
What?
Well, that's really the gross lamest in the book, thing ever. Like, oh, this person sucks. But yeah, in the show, it's like this like. Like, I just don't want this to exist. I'm like, go stop doing this. You stop now. Everyone stop. And I guess the fact that it already existed is, I don't know, testament maybe to just like how it's crazy that that didn't appear on anyone's radar, or it didn't appear on my radar, I guess. But
because
I feel like I would have heard something about it, but I guess British people are just like, yeah, we would all kill people. It's fine. So nobody made a big deal about it. I don't know.
British people don't all kill people. What are you talking about, bro?
Well, they would if pushed to the edge.
I don't know where you're making that assumption. I don't know where that came from.
Well, I'm just saying, why was it not made more, like, why was it not more newsworthy the first time around? I think it was just like, oh, yeah,
of course. Well, it's probably like just a, okay, well, there's probably a couple reasons. One of them being that there's so many reality shows out there that are, like, hella gimmicky. This one does have a bit of a hook, obviously, with the whole murder bit, but I mean, it could have just been ignored. And to be honest, like, we're so insular.
And maybe the big thing is the reverse in the end, where he's like, no, but actually.
Well, so I was watching clips from the old one when I was writing this article, and like, they do it to like 5 different people, right? But like, the way that the show aired, it showed everyone's kind of push at the end at the same time, as opposed to going through like Chris's story and then Amber's story and then Michelle's story. It just went through like, it's told each bit at the same time. So at the end, you see all of them decide what they're going to do. And from what I saw, they all push. But this one guy, he like, this one guy hesitates. Like, he really looks like distraught over it, and he almost doesn't do it. And then he goes ahead and pushes him. And then he smiles. He turns back to the group, and he has, like, the biggest smile on his face. And I was like, okay, that is scary. Like, beyond the reality show.
But wait, I don't understand.
Trying to get people to kill people. Like, the guy who thinks he killed someone and smiles freaks me out.
I feel like they can't really have done this, because the end result would be, like, all these people are guilty of an actual crime in the end. So.
Not really.
If they thought,
because
they
don't actually kill someone,
but isn't it attempted murder?
This isn't like Minority Report.
I don't know.
They, they didn't do anything. You know what I mean? Like, essentially, they nudged someone who was on a bungee cord.
But listen, what's the difference between that and the people who are like, I want to kill my ex, and I'm going to contract someone to do it, but then the contracted killer is actually a police officer, and then at the end they're like, oh, by the way, you're under arrest. Like,
well, probably
it's not
like
the,
no money changing hands and no like actual contract going down. Not to mention that, like, I'm sure that whoever, Darren Brown and his whole production team, have waivers and all kinds of legal paperwork. Like, they wouldn't make a TV show out of it if everyone's going to go to jail. They have to have protected themselves somehow. I get what you're saying. That, like, if someone has the intention to murder someone and feels like they go through the motions, even if that isn't the result, it feels like it should be a crime. And I'm sure that whoever is on this show and decides to push someone off a ledge is not going to have as many friends after February 27th. You know what I mean? Like,
well, that guy, I mean, he looks like a murderer, really. Let's be honest.
Well, and we haven't watched... you need to chill. Like, we've just begun, and you've already called British people murderers and just, like, randomly judged this dude, Chris, who looks really severely distraught over the whole thing, to be fair.
He does have his head in his hands, so, I mean, he's...
But, you know, it, like...
But he definitely pushes, right? I mean, come on.
Oh, yeah, for sure. That guy's going to push. He looks too upset about the situation to not do something.
So, do we know is this guy, was this segment in the British version, or did they shoot a new segment, or what's the
relationship? From what I saw, it wasn't.
Yeah, I think it's new.
I think it's new. I think it's like totally new and reshot. But a lot of the same actors.
They were like,
"This
went so well. Let's do it again."
If they saw this show 2 years ago, like, there are a couple of the same actors. So, like, if I ever saw that one guy who was, like, one big push. No, I'd be like, I think dude, I can't trust you.
I think it is a repeat because I'm just reading a review from January 2016 and they quote the line, Chris is enmeshed in a whatever web of lies or whatever. So
maybe it is a remake. Yeah. It was really unclear because I was trying to watch the old one and the trailer of the new one and they didn't look like the same people. Like the actors looked the same, but the actual Chris guy wasn't. But maybe he is. I don't know.
Oh, also, like, he can't really do that stuff.
Can I also just say, like, I hate to validate this in any way, but, like, remember the crocodile episode from Black Mirror?
Oh, they also gave away in this review what happens. Oh. Womp womp.
Okay, well, don't say it here, because we haven't spoiler.
I kind of feel like I should, because I feel like this is reprehensible television, and this guy is a dick and doesn't really deserve anyone's attention, but...
Do you want to follow the train of thought I was on for a second? Remember the Black Mirror episode of Crocodile?
Yeah.
Yeah, very good episode. Very upsetting. Right?
Yeah, very upsetting.
Yeah.
And, like, obviously, you fell for the woman who worked for the insurance company, and you were, like, didn't want her to die at all. But, like, part of me also didn't want the blonde chick to get caught either. Like, obviously, she became, like, a monster. But, like, at least in the very beginning when, like, she kind of accidentally gets the guy in the hotel. Like, I mean, it wasn't accidental. It was clearly intentional. But it was, like, a fit of rage. It wasn't premeditated, you know? Like, you empathize with that a little bit. It's when she, like, goes and kills a bunch of other people that it starts being really stressful.
Yeah, but I think, like, you're supposed to fall down that hole over there. I think that's the intent.
Of course, of course. And that's what I'm saying. Like, there's some piece of the show where, like, you're like, oh, this dude is reprehensible and he sucks for having committed murder. But you don't know the situation.
Oh, no. Not that I'm ever justifying murder. I don't feel bad for that guy at all. I feel bad for the moron asshole who made this show. Like, he seems like a real piece of shit.
Oh, my God, yeah. And I was like, because I wrote that story, I, like, fell down this, like, YouTube rabbit hole. I didn't even watch any of them, but, like, some of the headlines or the titles of the videos on YouTube about this guy are like, he tricks a psychotherapist, and like, Darren Brown convinces you are someone else, and like, all this shit. It's just like, get over yourself, bro.
Yeah, he looks like a bad British Chris Angel. Like, Chris Angel is already terribly bad. I'm not saying Chris Angel is good, clearly, but
he's
worse.
He
also spells his name Darren with two E's, which is ridiculous.
Yeah, and he says Brown with two syllables. Brown.
What?
Oh.
Really?
I don't like that either.
There's a lot of bad stuff going on there.
Do you want to ruin a show so we can ruin it?
No, seriously. Here's my prediction, though. Like, a bunch of people are going to watch this.
All right. But you know what?
Because, like, we're bad people.
Not our viewers, because I'm going to spoil it.
Daryl, if you want to push, like, we're not going to stop you from pushing, but we're not going to tell you to push either.
I get it. It's become us.
One big push, Daryl.
No. Okay. Instead, I'll just share the news that...
It's obvious that he pushes. Like, you've already given it away.
Well, I'll share the news that a movie based on Flaming Hot Cheetos, the flavor of Cheetos, is now in the works from Fox Searchlight. So,
wait, what?
That's real. That's a real news from Variety.
No, it's not. Yes. You're lying.
No, I'm not. It's breaking from Variety right now.
There's a movie about Cheetos?
It's inspired by the flavor Flaming Hot Cheetos.
Who is making this?
I don't know, dude. I don't know. My dad works for PepsiCo, so I can't even, like, really participate in this conversation. Because on the one hand, I'm like, good for dad.
On the other hand,
I'm like, bad for us.
Wait, it tells the true story of Richard Montanez, who rose from humble beginnings to a successful businessman when he created a food phenomenon, Flaming Hot
with
Cheetos.
The Cheeto.
Isn't that...
Okay, that actually
sounds like...
Doesn't right? sound insane.
So did you guys... I have a little history for you. The original Cheeto was the Cheeto Puff. And the Cheetos we know and love today, the crunchy, like, globby-shaped ones, actually came from a malfunction with one of the machines. It didn't, like, puff the air into it, and so it just came out and fried it immediately the way that it was. And someone tried it and was like, this is delicious. Let's sell these.
Well, they were wrong.
That's the story of the Cheeto.
I hate
Cheetos.
They're
both good.
No, I don't like any Cheetos. They're all bad.
Oh, whatever, dude.
I'm not a fan either.
Oh, yes.
But I can't even try with you. God. Let's move on. What's the next news? All right.
Or I'm okay, end so up next pushing up, Darryl. We have some news about Hulu, which is to say that Hulu had an outage this past weekend. And this is not the first big outage that they've had. They were also having some issues during the Super Bowl, a really bad time to have issues. And then this weekend, you know, I think people were trying to watch the Olympics or trying to watch the NBA All-Star game, and they kind of had login issues again. So there's a lot of angry tweets, and people are not very happy with Hulu right now.
How long was it down? I didn't read the story.
I think they kind of announced, in terms of the announcement of the issue, they announced it, and then an hour later, they said it was fixed. But, I mean, it seems like something where it only affected some users. And, you know, so maybe for some people it was shorter. Some people didn't notice any issues at all. But I think it seems like about an hour.
Was it
some users? I wonder if it was location-based, or was it just, like, a certain bucket?
Yeah, they haven't really said.
Was it about, was it during curling? Americans love curling now. You guys discovered it. You're welcome.
We didn't discover it. We rediscover it every 4 years. Oh, and then after 2 weeks, it goes away again. So we don't have any.
But this time there was a new version of it, which was like not 8 hours long. So I think people enjoyed it more.
Yeah. Also, like, doubles. I feel like there was
so weird
better
to me that you would do this sport where, like, you know, people just don't care about it for, like, you know, 4 years.
Hey,
and then for a couple weeks.
Speak for your own country, because we watch it all the time.
You do not watch curling all the time.
The Scott Tournament of Hearts, for instance.
Don't lie, dude.
No, hey.
You watch curling all the time? Is that what you're trying to tell me right now?
Me personally,
I don't believe that.
Currently, no. But I did grow up watching it all the time. And my parents watch it all the time. And a lot of people in Canada watch it all the time.
Yeah. Okay. I'm not even going to comment. About the outage. I feel like Hulu really has to get it together with this stuff. I mean, you never know what causes these issues.
Well, it seems like demand, right? Like,
yeah, like that's the obvious answer, but it could be anything. Do you know what I mean? Like,
well, if it's happening during peak hours, like whatever the cause, like you can't have it happening during the periods of high demand. That's like the whole point, right? Like that's why, that's what people are there for.
It doesn't seem like Hulu's like short on resources either. Like if this happened during the Super Bowl, it shouldn't happen again, theoretically. You know what I mean? Like, you have all the resources and data you need to see what kind of viewership you're going to get at these peak moments. You have, you know, backers and owners, essentially, who have the cash to, you know, help you back things up and whatever, get more servers, whatever the hell is needed to stop this from happening. Like, do it. You know what I mean? Like, if this happens again, it shows just, like, a laziness, in my opinion. The outage thing. So when you have cable and your cable goes out, like obviously you're upset and you want to watch whatever went out, but it's like there's no one to be mad at really. It's like, oh, it's just out. Like they're the incumbent and the cable's out. You can't do anything about it. But like when Hulu Live goes out, people get so much, it's so much more high stakes because people are like, I canceled my cable for you. And it's not really that cable's any more reliable, I guess a little bit, you know, but like it just, I feel like it makes people so much more angry. And then they pull out like on Twitter, they said something like, we've received word that all affected services should be fully restored. Users that are still running into trouble are encouraged to try these basic troubleshooting steps. It's like anytime someone's giving you basic troubleshooting steps, that to me is just also like a rage-inducing moment. Like, I don't tell me troubleshooting steps. You know what I mean?
Yeah, especially
maybe
if
I'm
it's
a little
a
too
broad
far
outage. Like, and that you know that everyone else is down. Is that what you're talking about?
Well, they essentially said like, oh, your problem should be solved now because we fixed the outage. So if you're actually running into problems, like here's your troubleshooting tips. Which, like, I get the point of, because, like, then it must be something else and it's not the outage. But, like, I don't know. I just, like, having a time frame or, like, explaining the problem or, like, trying to promise that it'll never happen again is much better to me than, like, if you're still having trouble, you should go through this checklist and, like, turn it off and turn it back on and, like, log in and make sure you're connected to the right Wi-Fi network. Like, that's just annoying. It's just insulting to me.
But what if people are still having trouble?
Well, then they should check the troubleshooting tips, obviously, but like, just don't tweet about it.
But I understand that, like, if you were like sitting there and it wasn't working and somebody was just like, have you tried turning it off and turning it on again? Like, obviously that does work sometimes, but it's also something about that can like just rub people the wrong way and make you be like, good.
Well, and like the vast majority of people who are like trying Hulu Live are people who like know better. Like they know like, oh, I should check the Wi-Fi network. Oh, I should like turn the device on and off. Like they know all of those tips, you know? Like I don't think I'm overestimating the demographic, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, but
so,
yeah,
like, don't tell
and
me.
And
that.
They should apologize too, like you're saying. Like they should definitely make some kind of apology, although.
Well, and then I think with the Super Bowl, they actually like were offering some refunds too.
Right.
So I don't think they've done that in this case.
Yeah.
Anyway, Hulu had an outage. Yeah. Don't do it again, Hulu.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess should we move on to the next piece of news then?
Yeah.
All right. So we last week reviewed Black Panther. And I think we all thought it was going to do pretty well. And in fact, I know like both of you were kind of saying like, this idea, even though Jordan hadn't seen it yet, of it's not just sort of another Marvel superhero movie, but it is going to be this sort of cultural event, and that in a pure dollars and cents way has turned out to be the case. I think it's, we're recording this on Thursday, and it's expected to cross $500 million domestic today, which basically means that it's essentially the most successful Marvel film of all time, except for the first Avengers movie. Like, it is doing insanely well.
As it should be, you know, according to what you guys said, like, it's not just a great Marvel movie. It's not just a cultural phenomenon. It's not just a great action movie, you know? It's like, it's just a fucking great movie. So, pardon my language. But, like, that's essentially the point that you guys got across last week. And it only makes sense that the box office would kind of reflect that, you know?
Yeah. And what if I have, like, the best Monday and best Tuesday of any movie?
Right. Of, I think it's certainly of any Marvel movie, yeah.
Yeah.
Let me see if it's
no,
of
I
any.
I think it might have been of any. Or the headline.
It had the best,
the
had the best Wednesday
rating.
Of Marvel. I'm not sure about Monday and Tuesday, if that was Marvel or all time. But it's definitely like up there, you know, like, I think in most cases they're comparing it to Marvel films. Because I think particularly The Force Awakens, I think in most cases did better. But like, I mean, that's, and again, I may be getting some of the details not quite right, but essentially like the fact that it's simply like up there in that conversation is pretty crazy. Like if it's either, you know, it's going to be one of the, you know, it's going to be one of the highest grossing films of all time.
Yeah.
It's the ninth biggest Tuesday gross of all time. The seventh biggest Tuesday gross, not counting Amazing Spider-Man and Transformers, which opened on a Tuesday.
It's,
and it had a record breaking $40 million Monday.
Best Monday ever. But,
there you go.
Beating Star Wars The Force Awakens.
I think the other thing that was interesting about it is that, I mean, it seems dumb to even acknowledge this in retrospect, but obviously there was, you know, one of the reasons this movie is so unusual and why people are so excited about it is that until now there'd been this sort of expectation that black characters, black actors, black filmmakers, you know, black stories didn't, you know, there was going to be a cap on that, that they're only going to do so well. They'd be, you know, reach the quote unquote urban audience, but they were never going to be this sort of four quadrant blockbuster. And that's obviously completely wrong. I mean, that it's both it's a story that is universal. It's not just for a black audience, but it's, you know, that, you know, you look at the poster, you look at the characters, you know, that they don't need to put like a white guy in the center of it to get, you know, a white audience to come out. It's you can actually have this incredible cast and people of, you know, all of ethnicities are going to come out. Although I guess one of the other interesting things about the demographics is that this is skewing much like a much larger proportion of the audience is black and Latino than you would see with a normal Marvel movie.
Right, but...
And so if anything, you know, it's opening it up, so but well, it's not like closing down white people, essentially.
Yeah, I think
that's what you're saying.
I'm sure there are some white people who feel that it is.
Yeah,
but,
sure
you know,
there are.
Fuck those people.
They're awful. Okay. Well, and you know, it'll be interesting too to see over the next like month or so how it does, because there's so many good movies coming out too, or supposed to be good movies. We got Red Sparrow coming out, Ready Player One.
Is Red Sparrow supposed to be good? I didn't read the reviews.
I don't know, but Jennifer Lawrence is in it, so right. Yeah, probably.
I thought it got kind of
and it's the guy who directed like a bunch of Hunger Games movies.
It got mediocre reviews.
I think so.
I don't think that'll stop a lot of people from going to see it, to be honest.
Yeah.
But anyway.
What were the other ones?
But yeah, I mean, I think like the buzz around this is
Ready Player One, Tomb Raider, A Wrinkle in Time, Pacific Rim Uprising.
I feel like Ready Player One is the anti-Black Panther.
Probably.
It'll be the best comparable because it's like the...
But I can't not be excited about it. Pathetic, white,
young male, power fantasy, gross, bad movie. That is bad.
Wait, pathetic? Why is he pathetic?
Ready Player One is an awful, awful book.
Why?
Because it's just the gross, like, oh, imagine if all this stuff... It's like a very poorly written book that misses all the fundamentals of, like, good storytelling. And then it's, like, just basically the writer's, like, perspective of what would be a cool thing to happen for him as a nerdy teen. Like, it sucks. Like, it's a nerdy white guy.
Wait,
teen.
Jordan, have you read it?
Yeah, I have.
And did you like it?
Yeah, I did. I didn't necessarily think it was, like, the most well-written book in the world, but the story was... I followed the story and was interested in what was going to happen. Probably mostly because it's, like... Anything that's set in a different time to me is like very interesting, whether past or future. I just like seeing the worlds people build. But Daryl hated it, so.
I do think there is like, again, I haven't read it. There's a contingent of people who definitely just feel like it's this sort of teenage nerd fantasy that feels kind of shallow and.
But like
Flib.
Hunger Games could be that way too, right? Like, but I thought Hunger Games was a fun trilogy to read. Maybe I'm just in too into
I think
into
the difference
like
is
YAF.
That Hunger Games is not like about a power fantasy of like a straight cis white guy. Like speaking as a straight cis white guy, I know that kind of is shitty, but like,
right? It's like whose fantasy who is being indulged here?
I get it.
but yeah, we'll see. I mean, I do think just the fact that, you know, with some of these other movies, they come out and the weekend is big, or even the Friday is big, and then even throughout the weekend, it starts to fall because all the fanboys came out on Friday, and then it just kind of fell off. I don't think we're going to see that. I mean, we already are not seeing that pattern. I think you're just going to see that continue, and this is, you know, genuinely going to be one of the most successful films of all time, accounting for inflation.
And it's one of those films that, like, if you get left out, you're going to be left out. You know what I mean? Like, there's some movies where, like, your friends or your family is talking about it, and you're like, I just don't want to see it, you know? And then there are movies like Black Panther where you're like, if you haven't seen it and you have to wait for it to come out, like, you're missing the boat on, like, something huge that, like, everyone's talking about, you know?
Yeah.
Wait, so Jordan, when are you going to see it?
Obviously. My girlfriend is a bartender and she works every night. I was going to go on Monday, but she couldn't. She had to work. So I'm waiting to see it with her because she wants to see it really bad, too.
That's fair.
You got to go
that's
to a matinee. Shh, don't tell anybody, but just do it.
Thanks for keeping that a secret. When someone notices that I'm gone in the afternoon, I wonder what evidence they'll point to.
maybe Jordan's already done this, but she just doesn't want to admit it on the air, which I completely understand.
Yeah.
No, I'd admit it. I don't have anything to hide.
No, because
if I
want to
go see a movie in the afternoon. If I want to go see a movie in the afternoon, I'll do it. Okay, I'm not afraid.
Yeah, bold.
Yeah, I never will, and I never have. But I like to say things like that. Okay, so why don't we move on to our feature film of the week?
Sure.
Mute. Let's all do it as mute people.
Oh, perfect.
And just as a reminder, we'll do this. Probably the early part of this review will be spoiler-free. I think at a certain point, we're going to want to get into spoilers because there's definitely things I want to talk about, but we'll have some clear warnings. So if you haven't seen it yet, you know, feel free to keep listening, and then at a certain point, you might want to turn off.
And it's out on the day of when we publish this. So today is when it'll be out for you guys.
Yes.
So you can see it right after you watch, or you can
avoid it.
Pause right here and watch, depending. And then listen to us, or you can listen to us and take our warning, because I don't think it's going to be a positive review here today.
Yeah. So yeah, let's I guess maybe to give some context here, this is the latest film from Duncan Jones, who made Moon just a little under a decade ago, and I think that is like a great science fiction film.
It is. I loved it.
Yeah, and then he made Source Code, which was not a great film but enjoyable, and then he made Warcraft, which I actually enjoyed, but I don't think there are many people who agree with me, or not many people even saw the movie to have an opinion about. And then Mute was supposed to be sort of this return in some ways to the kind of style of Moon, where it was this sort of adult, you know, cerebral science fiction, where he kind of got to, you know, do the film that he wanted to do rather than something like Warcraft, where obviously that's, you know, meant to be a blockbuster that has to serve certain needs there. So I was really excited about it. And then I saw the movie and I wasn't crazy about it. What did you guys think?
What a strange,
oh my God,
circuitous route. I didn't realize that he made all of those. Like, I remember now when you mentioned Warcraft before, and I like Warcraft, even though it's dumb and cheesy, but it's fun. But I liked Moon too, but I never saw Source Code actually. But it still seems weird
it's
that the person
seeing.
Who made
I would
Moon
see Source Code
Warcraft.
Before I see Mute, for sure.
Yeah. I think I have it somewhere. I don't know. Like, I think I purchased that at some point when it was on sale, like, because I like sci-fi. But.
Oh my God, is what I have to say. Like, just actually shocked by how odd and just bad this movie was. Like,
yes.
It didn't even make sense until the end. And even then, like, it wasn't one of those twists where you're like, everything comes together. You're like, the last 10 minutes could have been cut. In my opinion, I mean, I get it, but like, could have been cut. And the dialogue itself was just, you didn't understand the motivation of anybody. So let's just give, without spoilers, the general premise of this film is.
Somebody else, I don't want to do that because I don't think I could describe it.
I'm going to try to describe it without giving anything away. But so there's this Amish person, guy, played by Alexander Skarsgård, who gets in an accident as a child. This isn't a spoiler because this is the very beginning of the film. And is mute because of it. Because his parents are Amish, he doesn't get the surgery he needs, so he's mute. And then you like flash forward to like futuristic Berlin, and it's essentially the story of him. It's like a love story plus a mystery, but with like all this edginess kind of thrown in. And like, you can't even really get into the plot because the plot is revealed in the last 12 minutes of the movie.
I think, I mean, one
is
other thing we can
assessment?
Say is that, yeah, is that, so it, I mean, and this is sort of in the way Netflix describes it, right? So he kind of goes looking for his girlfriend, and a lot of the plot revolves around that. And another big part of the plot then are these two characters, these two doctors who are played by Paul Rudd and Justin Theroux. Paul Rudd with an amazing mustache, Justin Theroux with an
blonde
amazing
hair.
Wig.
Yeah.
And I mean, one of the things about this movie is that, you know, that even though it's called Mute and Alexander Skarsgård is ostensibly the star, he like disappears for long stretches of the movie. And it just ends up being about these two doctors who you don't really understand
why
they're connected to the main story. And,
or why they're connected to each other even. Like their relationship to each other is really confusing throughout until the very end, essentially.
And it's confusing and it's just so unpleasant. Like, they're such unpleasant characters, like, which is crazy to say. Because, I mean, Paul Rudd is one of the most likable actors in the history of cinema.
Not in this movie,
and somehow
though.
They managed to make him unlikable here.
Same thing with Justin Theroux. Like, even when Justin Theroux plays a character that you, like, don't particularly like, it hasn't, like, tarnished the image of Justin Theroux in my mind. But, like, this really did. Like, I am mad at him. I'm upset with him. Yeah. I don't know.
I'm not mad at him. I'm just confused. I mean, I do feel like, I like, you know, this is one of those movies where I think there's some movies where like I can imagine reading the script and being like, this is going to turn into a great movie, and then there's all these other things that happen when you make a movie, and somehow it didn't turn out the way they wanted it to. This is, I have to think that a lot of the problems with this movie would have been apparent in script form, and so it's surprising to me that somebody would be like, yeah, this seems like a project that I'd want to be involved with. When the script just, to me, yeah, it just seemed like it had so many obvious problems.
Well, and it just feels like one of those situations where, like, you know, context is king, and this is a movie that's based on this, like, kind of these slow reveals, especially like kind of a bigger one towards the end or the last, you know, third of the movie. And in order to do that without losing people for the first hour and 20 minutes, it's a 2-hour movie. Mm-hmm. And like for the first 80 minutes, you're so confused and not even with anything interesting to look at. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's one thing to be confused and be like, I'm so anxious to find out what's going to happen to these folks or why they're telling these two totally different stories at the same time. Like, what is the connection here? Like, it wasn't like that. It was like, are we done yet? Like, what, how many more minutes do I have to watch this? Like,
yeah, I wasn't intrigued to find out what the connection was. And then when there was one, I was like, oh, I guess I cared actually, about that. I didn't really though. So
it could have made the movie more interesting, honestly, to know that like earlier on. Do you know what I mean? Like,
maybe. I don't think you could save this one. I think it was a bad movie through and through. I think everything about it was bad.
And it just seemed like there were a lot of like details thrown in that weren't necessary for the plot at all. Like that were actually like really distracting from the whole plot. And then there were characters where you were like, but I just odd, like just thrown in characters like Nikki.
Who?
Like what? Nikki.
Which one was that?
The guy who's like basically in charge of the prostitutes.
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it was just like there was way too much airtime for him, you know? Like,
I didn't know. Been a name. I didn't pay attention to what the relationship was between anyone, basically.
But that's what I'm saying by a distraction. Like, because I keep thinking this guy is going to end up being important, and he really wasn't at the end of the day.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It was very poorly made as a movie. Like, I think some of the visual effects were all right. Like, I don't know.
It felt very amateur.
Feel, but yeah, it did feel like an amateur movie. It felt like
the direction and the camera work was all just like very like, there's nothing super special about it, no, for sure, it really to keep like you engrossed.
People are like, some people are complaining about, or not complaining, but rightly criticizing Netflix for becoming like the made for TV movie, the new made for TV movie, like, generation factory, basically, with like a lot of its stupid crappy romances and stuff. And this was like that. This reminded me of like a bad sci-fi channel original film or something. It was like, it just sucked. And it was
I think like they're like, it's weird because, you know, by all accounts, this is like a passion project that Duncan Jones has been pursuing, you know, before he made his first film. Apparently, like, the first draft of this script was written in like 2003 or something like that. And that he has definitely been very vocal about, you know, just that Netflix basically just gave him complete creative freedom on this.
You're damning yourself, right? Like,
right. And so in this case, I mean, I think I'm not thrilled with the results, you know, taking him at his word that this is, you know, if we assume this is the movie he wanted to make and this is the movie that he's wanted to make for more than a decade, it's not a case of like, you know, crappy sci-fi channel just like, hey, like, we'll give you, you know, a couple $1 million, just go make any crap. But like, yes, you are a very talented filmmaker, go make this film. And it's just, I think the thing that's more confusing is, you know, that why was this the script that he's wanted to make for so long? And, you know, why did no one, I understand like wanting to, you know, ultimately let the filmmaker make the film they want to make, but it just seems like there's some fundamental things that just don't, that seem like obvious warning signs that this isn't going to be a great film, that like somebody should have said, hey, maybe we should have a conversation about the fact that we have these two incredibly dickish characters, you know, who become, you know, I think are increasingly unlikable and horrible as the movie goes on, and they, you know, get this insane amount of screen time. Is that a good idea?
Yeah, right.
And they're not like compelling either. They're not like, you know, I think you can have,
they're not like
even
empathetic,
we were talking about that
either.
Episode,
no,
Crocodile,
and your one,
right?
Sympathetic, like, character is like the, he doesn't actually talk the whole thing, and it's not like he's like compensating for that and delivering a really rousing performance.
Well, and like, right, how could you? Silence. Like, it's not like a script that's made for that. Like, it's, to me, it seems like a total waste of Alexander Skarsgård. I think he's fantastic. Like, I think he's a great actor, and I think he can be super funny. He can be emotional. Like, he's fantastic, and it was a waste of him because, and it's not because the character was mute. Like, that has nothing to do with it. It's because the script itself, like, didn't expound on anything. Like, this love story about him trying to find his girlfriend, like, we didn't even get why they were in love. There was, like, literally a scene and a half, maybe,
yeah,
of them together.
Part of it, there was one confusing part where I was like, wait, is she made up? Is she some kind of a plant that they did to trick him? And then I was like, no.
But
why was there a scene in there that made it seem like maybe that was a possibility? Like, I do not understand anything about this movie or how it was made.
It feels a little bit like, you know, like in those like writing classes and stuff where people are like, here's my plot, but then it doesn't feel original enough, so they have to add in all this weird shit. And they're like, oh, but she's actually, you know, adopted, and he is blind in one eye, and like,
I think,
just like,
I really
adding
think it comes
shit
down
for the
to,
point of,
I think it's more just like he had his own full control over this, and it was like Moon was clearly, okay, it had some of the same zaniness, right? And the oddity and the, like, the twists and turns and confusing plot lines. But it clearly was reined in by, like, a close network of professionals working around him who were able to take this, which was his first film, like, right? Like, or first big film, at least.
Yeah, first feature film. I think he'd done some, like, commercial work before that.
Right, and so clearly made in close tandem with, like, an actual producers and actual production assistants and second unit directors and things like that, who could be like, okay, we're going to make this make sense. Like, you're fine. You're a great person over here, David Bowie's son. We're happy to work with you. But we're going to fix this. And now this is like, okay, let's let this guy. I mean, I hate to bring that up as like, it must be tough to get out of the shadow of your extremely famous parents, but like, I feel like he doesn't have any real skill based on having seen this. And
oh,
this
my
is
God.
The product. Come on. This was a pure garbage movie. It was pure garbage.
I agree with you.
I wasted 2 hours
like,
of my day.
But like, not every single creative project from an artist ends up being like gold. You know what
no,
I mean?
No, not
like,
gold. Definitely not gold. But the one that you have the most control over, it turns out to be absolute pure shit. And it's your passion project for years. I feel like that is...
Yeah, it's not a good sign.
All the
I agree.
Ingredients are coming together to point to one thing, right?
Yeah, no, I agree.
I think it's, yeah, going a little far to say that he doesn't seem to have any talent at all, because I think, again, like, all of his three preceding films are worth watching, even if particularly Warcraft definitely has some problems and some dumb elements.
Wait, I did see Source Code. I was thinking of a different movie. I actually did like Source Code.
Right. So
what
he's
was
like
Source Code? I feel like I saw it too.
It was Jake Gyllenhaal. It was like Groundhog Day, but on a train.
I mean, on a train.
Oh, I don't know if I saw that or not.
And the train keeps blowing up, but then it's like a Groundhog Day kind of situation.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's good.
I don't think I saw that, or maybe I did and didn't care. I don't know.
Right. It's not like amazing. It's you know, I think all of his movies are well made. Even this, I mean, I think, on a production level, I wish it had been more interesting visually.
Yeah.
To me, it's one
I don't
of those
think it looked
things
like
where it,
cardboard or like jokey. I just think it was shot uninspiring cinematography, basically. But like sets and stuff looked fine.
I don't know. Like kind of uninspiring imagination too. Like what was up with the like some cars fly, some cars don't. They're electric. They look like army tanks.
Well, it looked like they just kind of did like a lazy Blade Runner set. They were like, what do we want this to look like? And they were like, oh, Blade Runner, but let's not think too hard about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, because we, you know, reviewed Altered Carbon on here a couple weeks ago, and I think that was a show also where you look at it and they clearly had Blade Runner as kind of a template. But then you know, they filled it in with a bunch of other interesting science fiction things, whereas here it was really just, you know, it was just like, all right, Blade Runner. And then they kind of just stopped there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Blade Runner in Berlin. And so some people were speaking German.
Right, there was German.
Right, and with more regular streetcars. And and then they had the food delivery stuff.
Yeah, the food delivery drones were probably my favorite part of the whole movie, to be honest. I'm not joking. I was like, that's cool. I can get in with that.
Yeah, they were fun. I think there were like little things in it. There just weren't enough, and too many of the other things that came up where you're just like, why are we spending time on this?
Well, the big things you're supposed to care about are like either upsetting or like don't make sense. And so you're just like, ugh.
At least
like those little details are not enough to sate me.
He has admitted, I found like a thing where the Blade Runner is like an explicit inspiration. So at least it's not like just knockoff and they're not saying that's where it came from. It is definitely like Blade Runner style world. But yeah. But yeah, I don't. The little twists and the little like, because that's what I mean, Jordan, you're talking about Ready Player One, and like it's neat to just see. That's kind of like the redeeming thing of most science fiction is like, okay, at least it's like an interesting world that they've created for whatever else is going on. But like, yeah, the details here, there was nothing interesting about the world. It just felt very rote and it's sort of futury. Bye.
Yeah, Maria watched with me, and like I swear every 12 minutes she was just like, I don't really like this.
Yeah, that's how I felt. Like, yeah, I was saying that internally every 12 minutes.
She's like, I don't get it.
I started out because, again, I was so hopeful about it. Like, I remember, like, for the first 10 minutes, and I think, like, the introduction to him and to the world is not amazing, but it's like reasonably like well done, where you're just like, I like seeing like the bar, I like, you know, seeing him interact with his girlfriend. But then especially when she disappears, it really starts to go downhill pretty fast, and I started to be like, I don't think this is good.
Yeah, the like even the bit where he has the accident and his like mother refuses the surgery, I'm like, oh, this is a really interesting hook. But then I remembered like the trailer doesn't seem to be about like an Amish person in the future who resents his mom.
No.
This isn't the movie I signed. You know what I mean? Like what? No, I don't know.
All that was just a plot device for him not to talk. Like it was just like, how do we figure out a way where he doesn't talk for the whole movie?
Which like, what was the purpose? Do you know what nothing. I mean? Like, what like, was the purpose
it was circular.
Of that?
It was just like, it was, it's because it's...
And he, like, finds his voice and, like, the, you know...
It's like, imagine you had an idea when you were young and you're like, this is the idea for the thing. And then you just religiously stuck to it later without thinking about, like, why you came up with that plot idea to begin with. And
well, that's
like,
what I'm talking about, those writing classes where people just, like, add a twist.
Yeah.
Not to serve any purpose, but just to be like, oh, this is quirky and weird. Like, you know what I mean? Like, she always paints her nails orange. It's like,
and I feel
why?
Like this also has the haze of memory, too, where, like, maybe at one time he had those ideas. But I think it's just, it's one of those things where you, like, come up with something you think is a really good idea, and then, like, you get the means to go back to it, and it's a passion project for you, but you're too close to it and didn't take the time to think about, like, oh, maybe there's a reason I never made this garbage, because it was bad.
It also feels like he... You know, at some point there was a realization that building a movie around a mute character is not impossible. I mean, you can, The Shape of Water is not a perfect movie, but I think does a good job with that. But is a challenge, and so the way they responded to that challenge was just by adding these two other characters, and or if they were
lot.
In the script already, expanding their role like really dramatically, and. That was a bad decision, a really bad decision.
It was, yeah. Yeah, that was, again, just confusing. I feel like maybe we should get into spoilers now before.
Yeah,
because
I have,
so
like, more to
it.
Unpack.
Yes,
but.
Yeah, all right. We are getting into spoilers. If you have not seen Mute and you want to be unspoiled,
after that
you should
stunning
stop listening
review.
Now.
Yeah, after just hearing what we've just said, like, none of you should leave, honestly. Like, just listen. You'll know the story and you don't have to go through what we did. But if you want to watch it, go away now. Your time limit is up.
All right.
We're starting. Okay. A couple things just off the top.
Mm-hmm.
Like, well, actually, I guess we could just tell the story real quick. So his girlfriend goes missing. there are like Russian, this Russian dude, I think, who like owns the bar where they work and also has like his own little like hooker ring that's run by his right-hand dude. And his girlfriend goes missing, so he goes looking for her, and it leads him in all these dark corners. The whole time she was trying to tell him something about someone. And in his search for her, he comes across her mother, and her mother says, oh, like, she's got a kid. And he realizes she has a kid. And then towards the very end of the movie, you find out that this guy, who's a surgeon for the Russian mafia guy, cleans up his wounded soldiers. And his buddy, who's also a surgeon, the guy who plays Paul Rudd is the father of the kid. Mm-hmm. And then you eventually find out that Paul Rudd stole the girlfriend away and killed her to keep his daughter. He's an AWOL American soldier, which like another random freaking, like, why does that, you know what I mean?
Right. But
whatever. So he killed her, was trying to get his daughter out of the country, and Alexander Skarsgård comes in and just essentially beats the shit out of everyone, including him.
Yeah. That was like, anyways, we'll get to it when we get to complaints. But that was a better description of the plot than the movie does. Like, the movie wanders
well,
around,
it was shorter,
telling that in a way that is not at all as linear as Jordan just did.
Thank you. I'm a storyteller by nature. Yeah. And then at the very end, his buddy, blonde Justin Theroux, grabs the daughter
in the movie.
Yeah. His name's Doug in the movie, which is lame. And sorry to all the Dougs out there.
I thought it was Duck. Like, yeah.
That would make more sense because Cactus and Duck, and it's like army names. I guess that makes a lot more sense. I was hearing Doug the whole time, and I was like, he doesn't look like a Doug. He feels much more edgy than a Doug. But anyway, again, no offense to Dougs. Blonde guy, Justin Theroux, grabs the daughter. He's like a surgeon who does like prosthetics and stuff, and he puts a voice box in Alexander Skarsgård to try to get him to say he's sorry for like another unknown plot point, really, but like wants him to say I'm sorry. Alexander Skarsgård drowns him in a really clever way, actually,
because he's swimming, like he's a swimmer. They established that at the beginning of the movie.
Well, he also like pushes all the air out of his lungs.
Yeah, because he's used to that from being a swim man.
Yeah, he knows all about swimming. So,
and also because that's part of the way he drinks water.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, he like guzzles water, like another unknown, like totally random.
I thought that was like, oh, I guess it hurts him to drink water. That's important to know.
That's what I thought at first, but then when they brought the breath thing back, like I was like, oh, was that also supposed to be like preparation for this?
No
in
idea.
Some way?
I'm not sure.
No, I don't think he was preparing. I think it was like a character quirk. I don't think it hurt him or he was preparing. I think he just like, it's a calming mechanism to like drink a full pint of water in one.
The fact that we're all, none of us
but
know
also
what
the, like,
this means.
The kind of where he goes,
yeah,
you know,
like to
yeah,
prepare
yeah,
himself.
He like
swims
did a big,
or drinks the water.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I don't know, whatever. So that's how it ends. And then he takes the daughter to the grandma.
Oh, but he uses his voice
again.
That's what finally prompts him to use his new voice.
Yeah, she's leaning over the edge of the bridge, and he's like, stand back, it's dangerous. And then he like swims off, and he's like, dangerous, dangerous. I can talk. Not like that, but like it felt a little bit like that.
Yeah.
So that's the movie. Now, I do want to get into my like first point, and yes, the movie itself with all of its ridiculousness and like roundabouts and reasonlessness upsets me. But one thing that really upsets me was like the introduction of the whole pedophilia thing,
right,
with Justin Theroux, who's also like kind of gay, and like sexuality is fluid. I get that between like consenting adults.
Yeah, at first they made them both like, oh, they have like sort of fluid sexuality, and that's fun, it's great, it's the future. And then later they're like, also,
Justin Theroux's a pedophile.
He's
and
a
then
pedophile.
You're like,
oh, shit, guys, that's awful.
Yeah, like we don't need that. Like we don't need that. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. It's just like any corroboration between like the gay community and pedophiles really upsets me. You know, like correlation, I guess, not corroboration.
Yeah, exactly, because it's like a super damaging stereotype that like does not
that, like,
need any more reinforcing.
A lot of people believe. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like a lot of really ignorant people actually believe that there's some sort of leap to be made You know what I mean? And like that shit is so irresponsible. I feel like if you're an artist, like it's just irresponsible. Like there's nothing edgy about it. There's nothing that makes anything more interesting because of it. It just...
I guess it served the goal, because it seemed to be the goal was to make both of those characters as despicable as possible. So it served
then
that.
Then don't make them gay. Like,
no, exactly. Yeah. I mean, that, right? That was not like, necessary to the plot at all.
Don't make them call
either.
Each other babe. Like, yeah. That is so it confusing.
It was strange because they and especially initially, you assume that they are gay.
Because they
no,
call
like,
each other babe. Like,
yeah,
that's why.
And they talk
because
about
they're calling
being
each
in a
other
relationship
babe.
Or something. I'm like, something
yeah,
with babies.
Like, sleeping
but
together.
Or whatever.
But they don't. I don't think they ever explicitly confirm that they're sleeping.
Yeah,
together,
they confirm
so
they did when they were in the army. They definitely do. Explicitly.
Yeah,
oh, that's
yeah,
right.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They do. Okay, that's right. You're right. You're right.
So that was really upsetting, and like, I don't know. Like, I don't even know how to talk about this honestly without sounding wrong. But like, the scene where Paul Rudd is like, "I know that you're a pedophile." He kind of like finds out. I think he had suspicions, and then like kind of. It gets confirmed by these nasty video cameras and stuff that the doctor had hidden. And he just like forgives him. He like slaps him around. He's like, "You can't do anything. Don't do anything like this. You can't be around my daughter. Like,
yeah.
This is bad. Don't do it." And then they like hug it out and go to the mall. And I'm just like, what is
oh,
this
yeah, they did
whole
that weird
situation?
Shopping scene. I forgot about that. That was a very strange scene.
Yeah, and then he steals nuts and freaks out, and it's like, yeah. This is supposed to show that he has a temper. It's like, I don't know.
And then
know.
Later, that's like why the Justin Theroux character is like fine letting the other one bleed out. He's like, "You should have been nicer to me." And I
yeah,
think
when you found out I was a child molester, you should have been nicer about that confrontation.
Man, was it ever a bad movie. I can't get over how bad it was. At first, I thought it was just like, sort of. Bad, like, oh, this is just sort of bad,
it just
but whatever,
gets worse.
Fine. And then, yeah, it just, like, digs itself a hugely deep hole where you're like, because at first I was like, oh, Paul Rudd's in this. That's kind of interesting. They just show him a few times, and I'm like, oh, yeah, I guess that's Justin Theroux, too. But then they, like, keep bringing them back, and then every time they do, they're like, it's like they're like, no, did you want this to be good? It's not good. Here's a reminder of why. Here's
yeah,
an extended
like,
scene with people that you once loved that we're going to ruin for you.
Yeah, forever. The most impressive thing about the whole movie is getting me to feel the way I do right now about Paul Rudd and Justin Theroux.
Yeah, like, just being like actually angry at them. They do a good job of that,
something.
But to no good narrative effect. Like it's like you did successfully make them villainous, despicable characters, but like didn't. It's not like I like your movie now because of that. It's like,
and if anything, like I feel like bad for Alexander Skarsgård because like I have so much love for him. And it just felt like,
he's great.
Again, like a waste of his talent.
He's
you know
my
what
favorite
I mean? Like
Skarsgård, as I mentioned in our Slack.
Yeah, you love him too. Like, yeah. And he's so good. And it just felt like they like took.
Everybody in this is good. That's what sucks. They ruined everybody. They took all these great people and they put them in this real bad shit movie.
Another little thing, like when Alexander Skarsgård arrives at Cactus at Paul Rudd's house, and. He's gonna try to find his girlfriend or whatever, and he's in the basement, and like it shows a flashback of what happened to the girlfriend, and she was like suffocated by Paul Rudd, but like it makes it look like he can actually see that, like he has some sort of superpower, like he's channeling that memory. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Right. It's like
why do it that way? I'm so bothered by the whole thing.
Yeah.
I mean, and the other thing is, I mean, I was just really unhappy with the way that the girlfriend, what was her name? Nadira, her storyline was handled.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I think they were just like, oh, yeah, like, she's like a sex worker. And the stereotypical shitty things that happen to sex workers happen to her, and then she's dead. And in a real agentless way, that happens kind of off scene in like the worst possible. It's like, it was very bad. It's shit. Oh, God. This movie.
I was worried that because there's this thing in comics, right, where they talk about fridging.
Yes, fridging is, from the famous freaking Green Lantern storyline.
Right, where a woman is sort of murdered, brutally murdered, in order to motivate the guy, and that isn't exactly what happened here, but it's pretty
close.
It
is pretty close.
It gets there. I was glad that she wasn't literally in the fridge. I thought,
but they did it almost as if they were aware of that trope, and like. wanted to nod to it. He looked in a fridge. And then like,
yeah.
Oh, no, don't worry. We didn't do that. We just put her next to it, which is even worse.
We like, put her next to it in a plastic bag.
Yeah, lifeless corpse next to it. Oh,
God, this is a reprehensible film.
Yeah, it's awful. It's truly so bad.
One other thing I wanted to mention in terms of things that I did not like was... So that, like, I mean, in as much as you follow the investigation at all, which for long stretches of the movie you sort of lose track of.
Wait, you're who's investigating what?
Paul Rudd yell at people, but like when you do right, he like it does go on for a while, and you're kind of like, where is this going? And this is not very interesting. Everything he's learning is not that interesting, and it's kind of vague. And then like after like you know an hour and a half, it's solved because the Justin Theroux character basically decides to text him. And tell him to go to this place.
Yeah, right.
It's like the Indiana Jones thing.
It's so anticlimactic and unsatisfying.
Right? Like, I mean, not a perfect one-to-one example, but like, you know, how Indiana Jones doesn't actually have to be in the movie for like the plot to have happened the exact same way.
Oh, I see.
Do you know what I mean?
That's cool, though.
But it's true. Like, if Indiana Jones wasn't in the film, like everything would have happened the same way, essentially. And like, it's like that with this, like Justin Theroux's character is just screwing around with him and eventually just is like, gives up and is like, yeah, go here. That's where you'll find her. That's where you find what you need. It's just like, what was the point of the last 40 minutes when he's looking through phone books? You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, I thought there was one part where I was like, where it piqued my interest again plot-wise, where they were like, because you're like following this thing, this side story with Paul Rudd and Justin Theroux, and you're like, are one of these people good? When like Paul Rudd starts being like, oh, you can't do this pedophilia stuff. You're like, is he the heroic one? Maybe he's just got a gruff exterior, but this. But then I was like, I just don't care, actually. I'm not going to go through any of the gymnastics to try to figure out what they're doing with motivations of either of these characters. Because I just don't care enough, because they didn't make me want to. Like, it's just, ugh, it's so bad. And then it turns out that's not what it was anyway. They were just both shitty. And, like, Rudd is worse in many ways, or I don't know. It's impossible.
They're both awful. Yeah. I mean, I don't know how you say.
And they're not shitty and interesting. Worse.
No. They're not. It's not worth figuring out. That's the problem, right? It's not worth figuring out who they are or why they're even in this situation to begin with.
But like, even like, you know, there are some movies where like the bigger plot and like these motivations and stuff can be kind of not forgiven necessarily. They're not great films, but where like details or world building or like you know little context clues or even like the pace of the storytelling can kind of make up for like really bizarre shit. And like all the way down to the tiniest details in this movie were dumb. Like,
yeah,
he's going through these white pages trying to find the address of her mother, right? He has a phone number.
With
he's
his
going through
magnifying glass.
Yeah. And like even the way that they shot that scene is so just wrong. It's just not the way it should have been shot. He's like up late at night searching, then he goes to sleep, he wakes up in the morning, he looks again, and then you cut to like five numbers circled and then he's walking out the door. And it's just like even the tiniest things, right? Like could have been done so much better. Like you never see him like actually find it. You know what I mean? Like I don't know. It's just dumb stuff. It's just dumb movie. And I hated it.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I agree with that.
I would say I was more disappointed than hating it, but I'm not going to tell you you're wrong.
Yeah, I mean, nobody ever tells Daryl he's wrong when he hates stuff. I actually have a reason to hate this. Like, get off me.
Yeah, this one is something I hate with good reason, too. That's right. It's justified. But it actually actively made me angry. That by the time I was done, I was like, what? Like, what is you... This is... Ugh, it makes me feel awful. Also, it just has a bunch of, like, unnecessary gore in it, too. A lot of it. A lot of just, like, gross scenes of, like, medical procedures. Where you're like...
And Paul Rudd surviving while like drowning in his own blood for like way longer
way too
than
long.
Like is even necessary.
Making the same noises over and over again. And oh, that before we forget about because the another Paul Rudd part when you were talking about like the deserting thing, they did like one. There's like some military guy shows up and like talks to him and like has a name and everything. And you're like, we don't need this. This is not in service of anything. Like,
and it didn't come back as a plot point in any way. It was just a conversation where he was like, "We want to. I wish I could spend my money on hookers, but I can't." And Paul Rudd's like, "Yeah, sure you can. I'll hook you up."
Yeah.
And he's like, "You
better watch out.
You're AWOL." And he's like, "Good thing we're friends." And then that's the scene. And you're like, "But why did that happen? What?"
And then later there's an announcement like, "Oh, if you see anybody AWOL, please report." It's like, why? Why are you doing this movie?
If you see the guy, screw the guy or something like that. Like some lame motto. Oh, just down to the very smallest details.
So dumb. It. So inexpertly made. Like basically like you gave a film student. They're like, "Oh, please make a movie." And it's your first semester and just do whatever you think is good.
I will say the one thing that I genuinely enjoyed was the little Easter egg for Moon.
I know. I like that too.
Three different versions of Sam Rockwell on the court.
I like that, but then it made me mad. Like I realized I was only after I said like, "Hey, why is Sam Rockwell in this movie?" Because I didn't know about the Moon connection. And then you told me.
Wait, what?
And I was like,
I don't understand what that is. I didn't see Moon. What? What was that Easter egg?
Well, I don't want to ruin anything. Just go watch Moon and then like you'll get
it.
No,
dude,
I'm
never watching anything this guy made.
Oh,
ever.
Moon is
you should
great.
Watch
Moon.
Moon
is fantastic.
No, it's done. It's over.
But do you know what scene we're talking about? There's like the newscast and Sam Rockwell's in it.
Yes.
Anyway, it's clearly like that's definitely like the character he was playing in Moon.
Yeah, but that's all. Mm. Don't say anything else because we didn't agree to not have spoilers for Moon in case listeners want to watch.
Yeah.
Watch this first and then see if you're inspired to watch it. Be in my shoes.
I actually never watch this and go watch Moon is the better advice.
All right. Well,
and on that
we
note,
hated it.
Yep. Yeah, this is the first one I think. Well, no, wait. What did we watch? Oh, The Inhumans. But The Inhumans, I had a nice time. Like, I was like, this is enjoyable in a very bad way. Whereas this is like, this is not enjoyable. Do not punish yourself by watching this. Never watch this movie is my advice.
Oh, also, guys, this is like slightly unrelated, but I feel like when we do the TV show reviews, we watch like a few episodes and we talk about it.
Oh,
and
we
don't ever like really come back to it. Yeah, exactly. But I've been watching Babylon Berlin. I have like two episodes left in the first season and it only gets better. So for our listeners that listened last week and heard us talk about the first few episodes of Babylon Berlin, in my opinion, it only gets better and better. And if you're interested in the whole World War II, Rise of the Nazis stuff, like it starts leaning into that more and it's really, really good. So... The TV show, not The Rise of the Nazis.
Oh, God.
To be clear.
I plan to watch that, so I'm glad you came back and offered that up.
Maria's really into it, so it's all she wants to watch. We'll be done soon, though.
Nice. Cool. Maybe potentially we could do an episode where we do sort of a more like a spoiler-filled discussion of the whole season.
Yeah, that would be cool.
Yeah.
What's on the docket for next week? Do we decide? We have either Hard Sun or Everything Sucks, right?
Everything Sucks.
Yeah.
Which seems appropriate for this discussion.
Because Hard Sun, we can wait and give it a...
because it's March 7th.
Out. Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like Everything Sucks is going to be one of those things that I go into really pessimistic and probably end up really liking. We'll see, though.
Yeah, we will see. I'm very curious how I'm going to feel about that. I don't know. I feel like... because I don't have
I thought
good
I was going to like this and I hated it, so... You don't really know.
I had no expectations going into this, and I hated it. But I don't think... it's not possible to like this. It's not possible. So.
Well, and the trailer would confuse you a lot, honestly. The trailer for this is like, oh, here are all these faces I know and love, and like Future, and Berlin, and like there's so many like good pieces
how Netflix
and possibilities.
Gets you.
And then you watch it, and you're like, what the fuck?
Yeah, that's a lot of their trickery. Is
yeah.
Like, here are people you like.
But like also the trailer for Babylon Berlin was like crap, like comparatively to the show. Like
right.
It's like a completely different vibe.
I did watch the new Joel McHale. I almost forgot about that. But the new weekly show. I liked it, but it's just talk soup. It's the same thing.
Yeah. Okay. Well, it's been a good week, everyone.
Yeah, just a reminder, subscribe on Apple Podcasts, rate us on Apple Podcasts or, you know, the podcast app of your choice. And thank you for listening. Yes.
And your rating should not reflect the content that we watch. Just us.
Just us. Just right. Rate our hatred, not what we hate.
Because there are definitely people who think we make these shows. Like, we get, like, when we did the Godless episode, we got, like, emails being like, hey, great work on making Godless. I'm not kidding.
No, it's true. It does happen. So,
oh, man.
We don't make these.
Use that to get into exclusive restaurants.
It'd be great if people thought that we made this horrible movie that we just reviewed and then also said that about it. Like, we made that and then we were like,
that would make it better. That would make it so much better. It's like, yeah, we made it. It was a passion project. We cared a lot about inserting these random quirks and like shit
we're
into
so sorry.
It. And yeah, we think it sucks. All right. Thanks, guys.
All right, bye.
Later.